Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to Captain.
Join Jan Shaw and her guests as they discuss cosmic creating and the path to reclaiming our power as cosmic creators.
Library computer, data being received.
To go where too few have gone before. A production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's Cosmic Creating Show. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm known as the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, on Facebook and YouTube, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, and on Twitter at Coach Jan Shaw. Today is the 5th of September 2020, and the title of today's show is Dems Panic on the Attack, Pelosi's Shampoo and Setup. And I want to start by talking about the Dem panic, because the surge in the polls in favour of Trump has really made them extremely worried. X22 report often references panic in DC and panic in the deep state, and I think we're really starting to see it now. Because of the increase in the support of Trump following the RNC convention, the Democrats are now on the attack and using more lies and deceit to try and stop the surge in support and regain some of their lead in the polls. Although I think many of us who are Trump supporters know that the polls are not to be trusted. I mean, look at what the polls said about Hillary Clinton supposedly winning the last election. And it seems unbelievable to me that the polls should be saying Biden is in the lead when you look at the difference in the level of support that Trump gets at his rallies versus the level of support that Biden gets, which is absolutely minuscule by comparison. So I want to start by just giving you some information about how the RNC convention increased the support for Donald Trump. And this is an article from The Federalist, and the title is C-SPAN had so many Democrats calling in support for Trump that they had to change their protocol. And this was published on August 28th. C-SPAN changed their open phone line labels after an overwhelming number of Democratic viewers called on Wednesday night proclaiming their support for President Donald Trump in the upcoming election. I'm a longtime Democrat, born and raised. After watching tonight, I have made up my mind. I am definitely going to vote for Donald Trump, said one of the many voters who dialed in. Before the Republican National Convention, C-SPAN's open phone lines were labelled as open for Democrats, Republicans and other viewers to call into and share their opinions on air. After Trump's acceptance speech at the RNC convention, however, C-SPAN received an influx of callers who identified as Democrat but said they would be voting for Trump in November. Due to the increasing nature of these calls, the network adjusted the phone lines to encompass those who support Trump, support Biden, and support others. And there's a screenshot of a tweet from Andrew Clark. So many Democrats have called into C-SPAN supporting President Trump this week during RNC 2020 that C-SPAN literally changed their call-in structure tonight to make it more even. On left, C-SPAN after Biden's speech. On right, C-SPAN after Trump's speech. And there's a couple of images showing the phone lines before the change, which is Democrats, Republicans, others, and techs. And then after the change, support Trump, support Biden, support others, and techs. While polling about the effect Trump's speech on voters is not out yet, many of the callers who dialed in expressed their frustration with the Democratic Party, as well as the Democratic National Convention. The DNC, I turned off. They didn't name any policies. It was just depression. I'm voting for Trump, one caller stated. President Trump is fighting for Americans. I used to be a Democrat. I've switched completely. I'm now Republican, voting Republican all the way. No more Democrat for me, another said. Other callers noted that President Trump and the RNC's acknowledgement of the riots and violence in Kenosha, Wisconsin, is what pushed them over the edge to change their vote. I'm from Minnesota, where all these riots and looting and the burning started, and I mean, not a mention about us last week about saving our communities, helping our homeless, rebuilding our businesses, said one woman. This Republican convention, just in the last two nights, has awakened me that there is hope, that there are people that are willing to fight for us. I didn't vote for Trump, but I am now, most definitely. The riots going on, is that what we really want? I don't think so. It's amazing how the Democrat Party has changed, she added. Watch the Federalist Radio Hour host Ben Domenech and senior editor Chris Bedford break down the difference in the two conventions here. And this is a link to a video. There's a footnote. This article is corrected to show that C-SPAN made the change to their call-in labels Wednesday night instead of Thursday night. While the decision to change the labels occurred on Wednesday, it was not applied until Thursday night. And then there's an article by Red State, Dem woman's heartbreaking call to C-SPAN about riots explains why Trump is going to win. And it's got an image at the top showing a protester running past burning cars and buildings on Chicago Avenue, May 30th. This is after the death of George Floyd. The Republican convention is being covered by C-SPAN just as the Democratic convention was. C-SPAN had people calling in to talk about the convention. We covered one of those calls last night from a man who said he was a lifelong Democrat but would now be voting for Trump. But there was another call that just says everything for the millions of Americans watching the insane anarchy that has been going on in cities around the country. The woman caller was from Minnesota, not far from where there had been rioting. It was clear that she felt abandoned by her own party when looking at the Democratic convention, which embraced the BLM, spoke persistently about the peaceful protesters, and didn't speak to any of the concerns she had about safety or recovering the economy after the disaster in her area from both the pandemic and the riots. It wasn't until she heard the Republican convention that she began to feel that there might be hope that someone would care about their concerns. Not a mention about the riots, the woman said at the Democratic convention. Nothing about rebuilding our businesses. The Republican convention has awakened me, she said emotionally, that there is hope that there are people willing to fight for us people in our communities. The reporter asked her if she was frightened, to which she replied, absolutely. Here's a little bit of the story she was referencing at the end about the Democratic politician John Thompson, who went to a Hugo, Minnesota suburb with a BLM crowd and threatened the neighborhood because a police official lived there. And there's a screenshot of a tweet by Andy No. You're laughing like we won't burn this city down, mother. You can guess what the next word is. We're coming. Video from last week shows BLM mob threatening the residents of Hugo, Minnesota neighborhood where Minneapolis Police Union president lives. And the hashtag is Black Lives Matter. And there is a video in this tweet. And then Alpha News Minnesota. John Thompson, who recently won his primary for 67A in St. Paul, goes off and screams at neighborhood children, residents and neighbors of police union leader Bob Kroll, F. Hugo, Minnesota. BLM protesters gathered today outside Kroll's home. And there's a video, John Thompson political controversy, August 18th, 2020. Calling for Thompson to drop out following his actions at a protest in Hugo over the weekend. The woman who called into C-SPAN not only sees Democrats not speaking up, but actually being involved with this kind of behaviour. Meanwhile, the Republican convention addressed the question and said the madness should be stopped and they would work to stop it. They also talked about bringing businesses back and building the economy as well. This woman is a Democrat, but it's pretty clear that she wouldn't be voting for a Democrat come this November. This is what millions of Americans are seeing, and this has many moving to vote for the president, even people who say they never could have conceived of voting for him, who maybe hated him 6 months ago, because they see he gets the problem, while Democrats are insane, embracing it and still calling it peaceful protest. But they helped start this nonsense, stoking it when it started and suggesting it was justified. But they can't run away from the disaster they contributed to. Of course, we know that the left, the Democrats, are trying to blame Trump for the riots, which is laughable, considering that they've been encouraging Antifa and BLM and have never actually stood up and condemned the violence and the riots and the destruction. Just like the mainstream media, they've been pretending it was peaceful. If you remember, Jerry Nadler said to a reporter that the violence and the rioting was a myth, which of course it's been proven by all the scenes that we've been seeing of destruction and fire and violence and even killings, that this is blatantly not true. But now they're panicking because this is boomeranging. It's rebounding on them because the Democrats are seeing the truth that the Democrats have been inciting this violence to a degree. Kamala Harris was supporting a fundraiser for bailing out the people that were arrested during these riots, even encouraging them to continue with the protests, which, of course, are violent. The peaceful protests are being hijacked by these violent Antifa and BLM members. And it's patently obvious BLM is nothing to do with Black Lives Matter, because look at how many businesses that are owned by black people have been destroyed, and look at how many black people have been injured or even killed. So I want to share now a Western Journal article. If Biden and Harris really think Trump is responsible for riots, why didn't they mention it at the DNC? And of course, this is what these people who called into C-SPAN have been saying, that there was no mention of these riots. So the article says, and this was written, it was published 1st of September, the August political conventions are over and the only thing between now and the November vote is a likely October surprise and a lot of pivoting and pandering from Democrats. The Republican National Convention last week was a success in both messaging and enthusiasm. A bump in the polls for President Donald Trump seems to signal that, as Morning Consult concluded. President Donald Trump needed a convention bounce and he got one. The same cannot be said for the Democrats' virtual convention, which was a bizarre mashup of coronavirus fearmongering, attacks on the president, and identity politics. The Democrats also learned that their tacit endorsement of rioting has hurt them with voters who crave order amid a challenging year for most Americans. A number of reports have shown that since the establishment media and Democrat-adored demonstrations against perceived racial inequity began in late May, voters have grown tired of civil unrest. USA Today columnist James S. Robbins framed the situation for Democrats. Violence erupted last week in Kenosha, Wisconsin, after Jacob Blake was shot in the back by police. The mayhem followed a familiar pattern, with daytime protests devolving into nighttime looting and arson. But rage-fueled anarchy is no substitute for reform-based policy. And as violence in the streets continues, as it has in Portland, it is becoming a problem for election year Democrats. Press outlets have generally tried to downplay the violent aspects of the protests, sometimes going to absurd lengths. CNN's Omar Jimenez reported live from Kenosha in front of burning businesses, while a Karen described the scene as fiery but mostly peaceful protests. I mentioned this on last week's show. Robbins continued, "The narrative, buildings burn at peaceful protest, is Orwellian doublethink in action. This would be like reporting that most protesters were unharmed in Kenosha, even though three were shot, two of them fatally, allegedly by a white 17-year-old who thought of himself as a militia member. Pro tip, arson and shootings are news. The rest is context." When you're a Democrat and a USA Today columnist is telling you that your feeble stance on months of rioting is becoming a problem, you should take notice. Democrats, including presidential nominee Joe Biden and his running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, have taken notice. And this is a tweet by The Hill. Joe Biden: "Rioting is not protesting, looting is not protesting, setting fires is not protesting." And there's a short video clip included. Kamala Harris tweet: "I join Joe Biden in condemning this violence. This cannot, must not be who we are. Americans deserve a president who will heal our country and bring people together, not fan the flames of hate and division." More projection by Kamala Harris. Look at the contrast in tone from Harris, who told CBS Late Show host Stephen Colbert in June that the demonstrations should continue until November and beyond. "Everyone beware, because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day," Harris said. "Everyone should take note of that on both levels, that they're not going to let up, and they should not, and we should not." And there's a video clip of her actually saying that. The pair now joins other Democrats in attempting to spin the narrative that Trump is to blame for the continued violence, which always seems to occur in areas that are run by Democrats. The problem for Biden, who finally disavowed the rioting for the first time Monday, is that his empty words were too little, too late. Democrats own the violence, looting and destruction, and all the damage to life and property that have accompanied them. Fox News commentator Lisa Booth posed a great question Monday after Biden spoke out against the riots. If Joe Biden and Kamala Harris actually thought President Trump was responsible for the riots, why didn't they mention them the week of the DNC convention, she asked on Twitter. The question is a rhetorical one. Biden and Harris didn't mention the riots because they counted on the media's continued ability to continue to downplay barbaric, nihilistic political violence as peaceful protesting. Democrats spent their Zoom call convention portraying themselves as civil rights icons bound by chains. The shallow four-day event was a digital orgy of self-love, dramatic speeches, pandering statements, and appeals to the fear in the heart of many Americans. The message from Democrats was dark, just what I said last week. They didn't count on the GOP convention bringing such a hopeful message to Americans and breaking through to independent voters. And there's a screenshot of a tweet by Reagan Battalion. Breaking new poll: at real Donald Trump leads at Joe Biden among independents by 10 points. Trump 44% plus 10, Biden 34%. Not only did Republicans speak with passion and adoration for the country, but they actually gathered in person for much of it. Seeing a group of leaders with an optimistic worldview sitting next to one another felt normal. This week, following the conventions, the election is back to being a toss-up, if not favouring Trump, if you believe the polls. While many undecided voters might feel as much of an attraction to the president as his loyal base, riots, prolonged demonstrations, and political violence are not a product of his policies. Trump was actually censored by Twitter as far back as May 28th for expressing his displeasure with the initial rioting and looting in Minneapolis after the death of George Floyd. "I can't stand back and watch this happen to a great American city, Minneapolis," he said. "A total lack of leadership. Either the very weak radical left mayor Jacob Frey get his act together and bring the city under control, or I will send in the National Guard and get the job done right." These thugs are dishonouring the memory of George Floyd, and I won't let that happen. Just spoke to Governor Tim Walz and told him that the military is with him all the way. Any difficulty, and we will assume control. But when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Thank you. Now, it's interesting because this was interpreted by the mainstream media and by the left that he was threatening that the military would start shooting. But in fact, what he was referring to is the fact that the looters would start shooting, the rioters would start shooting. And that's exactly what we've seen. That was my comment, by the way. Twitter accused the president of glorifying violence in noting that his post violated the leftist tech giant's rules. Trump was proved to be correct about the unchecked violence, as looting and rioting in May have now led to numerous shootings, with two of those shootings being fatal, and within the last week in separate Democrat-run cities. The continued unrest is apparently wearing some people thin. Democrats are now aware of this, but the information came too late for them to use their socially distant convention to blame Trump for the riots they encouraged. So we sit here in September watching Democrats attempt to distance themselves from the monster they helped to create. And then we have another article by Western Journal. Kamala Harris' mentor admits riots have Biden-Harris ticket in big trouble. And the Kamala Harris mentor is actually Willie Brown, who she had an affair with. So this is interesting. This was published August 31st. The man who gave Senator Kamala Harris big breaks in California politics sees big trouble brewing for the Biden-Harris presidential ticket. Willie Brown, a fixture in California power circles, who has long acknowledged dating Harris in the 1990s, used a column in the San Francisco Chronicle this weekend to describe just how badly Democrats are being hurt by riots that pretend to be for the cause of racial justice. While President Donald Trump was an early and outspoken critic of the violence and has been willing to send federal agents and the National Guard to the worst-hit cities, Democrats have been proving to the American people just how spineless they are by being afraid to call out the rioters for the criminals they are. No sensible American voter will forget that Democrats staged a four-day national convention while violence tore at cities such as Portland, Oregon, during a summer of racial unrest that struck Minneapolis, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, and other Democratic-run cities, but barely said a word condemning the violence. Democrats made it clear then that they did not want to upset the radical left for fear it would hurt support for former Vice President Joe Biden in November. The fact that members of Biden's campaign staff had donated to a fund to bail arrested rioters out of jail isn't lost on voters. The fact that Harris herself has published a Twitter post seeking to raise money for those arrested for, in quotes, protesting, in Minnesota, the scene of some of the nation's worst rioting, isn't helping her cause. And it's got a screenshot of Kamala Harris's tweet. If you're able to chip in now to the MN Freedom Fund to help post bail for those protesting on the ground in Minnesota. That kind of activity might have scored points for the party's radical leftist base, but the vast majority of American voters are neither radical nor activist. And that puts the Biden-Harris ticket in a bad spot, Brown wrote. A recent Harvard Caps Harris poll found that 3/4 of people surveyed were concerned about rising crime in the nation's cities, he said. Nearly half were worried about rising crime where they live. Numbers like that have Democrats in a heck of a bind. And as an aside, of course, it's the Democrats that are supporting defunding police. Continuing, if they stand up and condemn the demonstrators, the left wing will label them as Trump flunkies and they'll be in all sorts of trouble. If they keep quiet or offer passive responses, voters will assume they're okay with burning and looting. What Brown is saying is that literally no one, not even supporters, will assume that Biden or Harris is speaking out against looting, arson and murder because they're actually wrong. Even leftists and liberals will see some ulterior motive. No conservative with any sense, of course, or even an independent who might actually be included to want a change in the White House, will see a Biden-Harris statement against the rioting as anything but a play for votes from the saner sections of the country. Even more importantly, Brown doesn't even claim the decision will be anything but political. In fact, the moral and ethical issues involved in the government's responsibility to stop mobs from burning, pillaging and killing at will in American cities doesn't even merit a mention in his piece. It obviously means just as little to the man and woman who are on the Democratic ticket. So in short, no one seriously disputes the idea that the Democratic ticket is morally bankrupt, ethically oblivious or politically spineless. The only question is what tactic it could use to be most effective. On Monday, Biden tried to address that in a speech in Pittsburgh, as CNN reported, but the real answer is that it could well be too late to make a difference. The die was already cast. And there's a screenshot of a tweet from KPIX5. If Democrats don't denounce the violence associated with street protests, the Republicans could exploit the issue to their advantage in the election, said former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown. And it's got the link to that op-ed. And there's a reply by @sociallysherry. It's too late. If you listen to C-SPAN calls after the RNC, so many callers said they were switching parties because the Dems moved too far left and the riots are scaring them. And Count Crazy Owl. Violent protests are euphemism for riots. Just call it what it is. Joel Pollack. Willie Brown. Burning and looting in the name of justice will hand election to Trump. And a reply from Jen @italgal. Burning and looting will also kill people, ruin livelihoods, and generally destroy civil society. But hey, political outcomes are all that really matter. Thanks for your concern, Mr. Brown. And David T, replying to Joel Pollack, it already has. The Democrats made their bed when they decided to let the radicals in their party take the lead. Trump, meanwhile, has been a law and order candidate since his entry into the political arena in July 2015, when he outraged liberals and the mainstream media by calling out illegal immigration as something that should be stopped on the grounds that it's illegal. On numerous occasions, the president has also made no bones about his anger at rioters trashing American cities and the mainstream media that cover up for them. It apparently only takes political courage and calculations to tell the truth about violence if you're a Democrat. In the column where he acknowledged dating Harris, Brown, a former San Francisco mayor and longtime speaker of the state assembly, also had no problems admitting that he'd aided his protege. Yes, we dated. It was more than 20 years ago. Yes, I may have influenced her career by appointing her to two state commissions when I was assembly speaker, he wrote. Still, there's no guarantee that Harris or anyone in the Biden campaign will read Brown's column. As Fox News reported earlier in August, Brown used another Chronicle column to urge Harris to turn down an offer to be on the ticket if Biden made one, so clearly he's not exactly a campaign insider. But his long experience in Democratic politics and his personal experience with Harris should give Democrats an idea of how badly they've botched their response to the riots by relying on cold political calculation. As author Maya Angelou famously put it, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. Even a Democrat like Brown knows the Biden-Harris ticket has shown America who they are, and that should mean big trouble come November. So my take on this is that the Democrats are so blinkered in their desperation to get rid of Trump that they're trying all these strategies to get more support and to blame Trump for all the problems that have happened. They've done it with the riots, they've done it with coronavirus and so on. And it's just backfiring on them big time because people aren't stupid. They're treating the American people as if they're stupid and can't see with their own eyes what is actually going on. And this is why Trump uses the strategy of optics. And Q has said this many times. People have to see it. You can't just tell them. And they're seeing it big time. And they're seeing the hypocrisy of the Democrat Party, who are now trying to play catch up by changing their tune about these riots, but they're not fooling anybody. Now, we know that the big tech companies, Facebook, YouTube, Google, Twitter, are all Democrat supporters and frequent censors of anything that supports Trump or the Republican side or goes against the deep state. And interestingly, this week, Facebook banned any groups or posts in support of Kyle Rittenhouse, saying he was a mass murderer. I mean, this is just so extreme. It's laughable. And, you know, there are many people on the Republican side who, and any, even people on the Democrat side who are against these riots, who believe that Kyle Rittenhouse acted in self-defense when he shot three people. And I've got another article from Western Journal. Gun rights group dismantles case against Kyle Rittenhouse. A spokesman for Gun Owners of America told the Daily Caller and News Foundation that the organization believes Kyle Rittenhouse was, in quotes, forced to fire in self-defense, end quote, the night he shot three people, killing two of them in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Rice said Rittenhouse appeared to have been trained and handled the situation with discipline and precision. The teenager's lawyer denies the claim that Rittenhouse is a vigilante and that he was in possession of an illegal firearm. A spokesman for Gun Owners of America, a prominent Second Amendment group, told the Daily Caller News Foundation that Kyle Rittenhouse's actions in Kenosha, Wisconsin, last week were justified in the context of self-defense. Firearms instructor and GOA spokesman Alan Rice, who spoke on behalf of the organization's lawyers, insisted 17-year-old Rittenhouse was within his legal right to self-preservation when he shot three people, killing two of them in the riots that followed the police shooting of Jacob Blake. "We don't think he did anything wrong as far as defending himself and using a firearm," Rice told the DCNF in a phone interview. "They chased him, they followed him, and he was forced to fire in self-defense." Rittenhouse was arrested last week after being accused of shooting and killing a man while he was being chased on the night of August 25th, according to a criminal complaint obtained by Axios. The 17-year-old ran into the road, tripped and fell to the ground, and allegedly fatally shot a man in the chest and a third in the arm as they rushed him, the complaint stated. "It's the defender's perception. Did he perceive his life was in immediate or otherwise unavoidable danger of death or serious bodily injury?" Rice said. "I do think he made the right call. I think he would have been seriously injured or worse, killed, if he didn't fight back. I don't think he had a choice. These guys were chasing him and he was outnumbered." Videos and the criminal complaint both substantiate claims that the teenager was fleeing from a group before the first shooting. And there's a tweet from Kyle Kashov. "New York Times investigative journalist shows that Kyle Rittenhouse did not shoot first. He was running away from Antifa and rioters pursuing him while shots were fired." And there's a link, there's a video included in this, with a warning that it contains scenes of graphic violence. Rice also invoked Wisconsin self-defense law. "A person is privileged to threaten or intentionally use force against another for the purpose of preventing or terminating what the person reasonably believes to be an unlawful interference with his or her person by such other person," Wisconsin law states. Rice insisted that Rittenhouse acted within the legal bounds of the state law and said the code is one of the more lenient in the US as it allows the defender to use threats and take preventative self-defense action. Rice pointed to statements from the teenager's lawyer, Pierce Bainbridge, to debunk critics' claims that Rittenhouse was illegally carrying the rifle. Bainbridge, in a Friday statement, wrote that Rittenhouse finished his workday as a community lifeguard in Kenosha, cleaned graffiti off a local public school, and then travelled to a car dealership after the owner's call for help from the public. Rittenhouse and a friend grabbed rifles that were legally possessed in Wisconsin to protect the businesses seeking aid, the statement read. We've got to remember, why were these people in Kenosha? These people are in Wisconsin because of a shooting to riot and burn, and we've got Kyle Rittenhouse going to a local school and washing graffiti off the wall, Rice said. Without knowing anything about the situation, it looks to me like Kyle Rittenhouse is a pretty decent young man. The criminal complaint issued against Rittenhouse lists a misdemeanor charge for possession of a firearm by a minor. Additionally, it is forbidden for minors to carry a firearm openly in the state of Wisconsin. Rice also said Rittenhouse appeared to be trained, and the accuracy of his shot placement may bode well in his defense. As far as the shot placement, we teach in self-defense training, hits count, misses don't. He didn't hit an innocent bystander, and his shots went where they needed to go. So that shows an amazing amount of discipline. He's obviously had training, Rice told the DCNF. I would guess that his defense team would raise that at trial and say he wasn't reckless, he wasn't dangerous, he hit the person who was trying to harm him, he continued. Rittenhouse is accused of killing Joseph Rosenbaum, 36, and Kyle Huber, 26, in addition to severely injuring Gage Crosscrooch, 26, according to the complaint. All three of the men had past convictions ranging from sexual conduct with a minor to felony strangulation and false imprisonment. Huber was hailed as a hero by some for trying to thwart the shooting by hitting Rittenhouse with a skateboard, but Rice disagreed. That skateboard ceased to be a skateboard when the person who had it decided to turn it into a deadly weapon, Rice said. That skateboard at that moment was the same thing as someone swinging a baseball bat. That was not an innocent kid with a skateboard, he added. An innocent kid with a skateboard would have gotten on his skateboard and rolled away. I digressed a little from the title of the show with that report about Kyle Rittenhouse, but I think it's important to get a perspective on what the mainstream media and Facebook are just calling mass murder before the guy has even been tried. So, you know, the rule is innocent until proven guilty, but they're trying to besmirch the character of this person before any of the real evidence comes to light. So going back to the Dems attacking Trump out of panic, I've got a couple of things to share with you. You know, one of the stories they've started telling is that Trump had mini strokes when he visited the hospital last year. And this again is from Western Journal. White House physician issues response to Trump stroke conspiracy theory, published September the 1st. The story has almost everything: secrecy, power, rumors, drama, but what it lacks is truth, according to Dr. Sean Conley, President Donald Trump's physician, who, consigned to the realm of partisan fantasy, claims that the president had suffered a stroke. In November, Trump made a low-key visit to Walter Reed Medical Center. Specifics were not disclosed. Enter Joe Lockhart, a former press secretary for President Bill Clinton. Did @RealDonaldTrump have a stroke which he is hiding from the American public? He tweeted Monday. That was on 31st of August. Health has emerged as an issue in the presidential election, given widely expressed concern over whether the verbal wobbles of Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden might indicate health concerns. Adding grist to the rumour mill is a snippet from one of the latest books claiming to know all and tell all about the Trump White House. New York Times reporter Michael Schmidt's book alleges that behind the scenes, the November hospital visit triggered ripples that reached the very top of the federal government, according to CNN. In the hours leading up to Trump's trip to the hospital, word went out in the West Wing for the vice president to be on standby to take over the powers of the presidency temporarily if Trump had to undergo a procedure that would have required him to be anaesthetized, Schmidt wrote. He named no source for the information. All of this set off Trump's ever-keen fake news detector. And Trump tweets, "It never ends. Now they are trying to say that your favorite president, me, went to Walter Reed Medical Center having suffered a series of mini strokes. Never happened to this candidate, fake news. Perhaps they are referring to another candidate from another party." Conley then offered a little more substance, saying in a statement that Trump had asked him to address the recent public comments regarding his health, CNBC reported. "I can confirm that President Trump has not experienced nor been evaluated for a cerebrovascular accident, stroke, transient ischemic attack, mini stroke, or any acute cardiovascular emergencies, as have been incorrectly reported in the media," Conley said. "The president remains healthy, and I have no concerns about his ability to maintain the rigorous schedule ahead of him," he added. "As stated in my last report, I expect him to remain fit to execute the duties of the president." Conley had written a memo saying the president did not undergo any specialized cardiac or neurologic evaluations at the time. And Kayleigh McEnany, the press secretary, shows in a tweet, includes a memorandum from the president's physician, just to back up what the article says. The Trump campaign pushed back hard against CNN and Lockhart, who serves as an analyst for the network. The campaign said in a statement that Lockhart deserves to be dropped by the network for knowingly pushing a conspiracy theory about President Trump's health. If another CNN employee said similar things about Barack Obama, they'd be fired immediately. So the same standard should be applied here, the statement went on. That is, of course, unless CNN is complicit in the smear campaign in order to level the playing field against Joe Biden, somebody who truly has lost a step. So they've been trying to claim that Trump is physically unfit to be re-elected as president, which is quite farcical when you think about the state of Joe Biden. But, you know, they'll try anything to try and get Trump out of office. The other thing that they tried was besmirching his reputation. And this was by making a ridiculous claim that Trump described America's fallen heroes as suckers and losers, which goes completely against his behavior in relation to his treatment of the military. So this is a Breitbart article, Donald Trump furious at The Atlantic, claiming he disparaged fallen soldiers. President Donald Trump on Thursday night personally denounced a story published by The Atlantic, which cited anonymous sources that claim Trump described Americans' fallen heroes as suckers and losers. "To think that I would make statements negative to our military and our fallen heroes, it is a disgraceful situation by a magazine that's a terrible magazine," Donald Trump said. "I don't read it, but I just heard about it." Trump spoke after he landed at Andrews Air Force Base after returning late from a campaign rally at an airport in Wisconsin. "It's a total lie. It's fake news. It's a disgrace. And frankly, it's a disgrace to your profession," he said to reporters who did not expect him to speak after exiting Air Force One. Video footage of his remarks featured the president denouncing the story in the dark, and it's got a clip from Fox News. The Atlantic story cited anonymous sources, once again, who claimed that Trump did not want to visit the Ayn Marne American Cemetery at the site of Battle of Belleau Wood during his visit to Paris in 2018, and that he was worried about his hair in the rain. The sources also claim that Trump said the cemetery was filled with losers and that Marines who died at Belleau Wood were suckers for being killed. But Trump was adamant that the story was completely false, calling the report unthinkable. "They made it up, and probably it's a couple of people that have been failures in the administration that I got rid of, and I couldn't get rid of them fast enough," he said, "or it was just made up, but it's unthinkable." Trump repeated the series of events that took place in Paris. His presence at the ceremony at the cemetery was cancelled because it was unsafe to fly Marine One to the site due to fog and rain. A presidential motorcade, he asserted, was out of the question because it would involve French police trying to shut down the busiest parts of Paris to make way for a last-minute trip. "The Secret Service told me you can't do it," he said. The president denounced the anonymous sources for the Atlantic article as worse than animals. "What animal would say such a thing?" he asked. "If people really exist that would have said that, they're low lives and they're liars," Trump said. "And I will be willing to swear on anything that I never said that about our fallen heroes. There is nobody that respects that more." Several members of the White House team who were present for the trip also publicly denounced the story on Twitter. "The Atlantic story on Donald Trump is total BS," wrote former White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. "I was actually there and one of the people part of the discussion. This never happened." Sanders said she was disgusted by the attack published in The Atlantic, recalling the moments that President Trump met with veterans. "These were some of the moments I witnessed the president show his heart and demonstrate how much he respects the selfless and courageous men and women of our military." Jordan Kareem, the president's body man during the trip, also weighed in on Twitter. "Again, this is 100% false. I was next to the president the whole day," he wrote. "The president was greatly disappointed when told we couldn't fly there. He was incredibly eager to honor our fallen heroes." Senior advisor to the president, Stephen Miller, who was also present for the trip, described the story as a despicable lie. "The president deeply wanted to attend the memorial event in question and was deeply displeased by the bad weather call," he said in comments to the Washington Examiner. Deputy Chief of Staff for Communications Dan Scavino also said he was with the president after the trip was cancelled due to bad weather. "There is literally not one thing reported from France that is accurate or true. 100% complete lies," he wrote. "This is a politically motivated hit piece on the President of the United States 60 days before a presidential election. A total disgrace." The Washington Examiner published an email from Secret Service detailing the decision to cancel the 2018 event. And it's a tweet from Rob Crilly. "White House official has sent an image of redacted email apparently showing bad weather call was indeed cause of Trump not attending Ain Marne American Cemetery in 2018. Dan Scavino and Stephen Miller were also both there and deny Atlantic's story. The Atlantic story also claimed that Trump said that deceased Senator John McCain was a effing loser and did not want to lower flags to half-staff when he passed away. But Trump said that he still respected McCain despite their disagreements and approved all of the honours for his funeral. "I disagree with John McCain, but I still respected him and I had to approve his funeral as president," he said. Trump said he approved the funeral and the plane transporting his body to Washington, D.C. for recognition, without hesitation and without complaint. "I felt it; he deserved it," Trump said. "I disagreed with him on things and he was a tough guy and I felt he deserved it." And there's another Washington Journal article that supports the fact that this was all lies. And this is "John Bolton responds to Trump fallen soldier story. I didn't hear that." And I'm not going to read this because I want to get on to my next point. But it's interesting that John Bolton, who is not a supporter of Trump, should actually challenge that story. So that seems to back up the fact that this was just a political hit job. And somebody mentioned that it was interesting. Biden put out a video, I'm not sure if it was an ad, that was basically using this story against Trump. So was it pre-planned? How did he have that video ready so quickly after this story broke? Definitely seems like a smear campaign to me. And it's very indicative of the level of panic in the Democrat Party, because I think they know they're going to lose in November and Trump is going to be re-elected in a landslide. Okay, so moving on to the next topic, Pelosi's shampoo and setup. I don't know if you use this term in the US, but You know, in my mum always used to go for a shampoo and set. Well, it just seemed funny to use that term for Pelosi's claim of a setup when she went to have her hair done. So again, I'm reading a lot from Western Journal this week, but it just so happens that those articles have come to me. Salon owner forcefully responds to Nancy Pelosi's claim of a setup. And this has been a hot topic this week because it's really shown the hypocrisy of Nancy Pelosi. And of course, what happened was that she went to a salon in San Francisco to have her hair done, despite the fact that these salons have been closed for 6 months. And it was the day before they were going to be allowed to open but provide services in outside only. So she went to this salon and booked a hair appointment with one of the people who rented a chair in this salon owner's business. And Nancy Pelosi was not wearing a mask. So that's kind of the background to this, that she's not allowing the salon owners to open, but she's the privileged one who's okay to go and get her hair done in one of the salons. So I'll just give you the Western Journal article. The affair of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's hair grew more tangled Wednesday night when the owner of a San Francisco salon lashed out at her after the California Democrat said video of her eschewing the rules during a salon visit was a setup. Security camera footage taken Monday at eSalon San Francisco, owned by Erica Caius, showed a maskless Pelosi with wet hair walking ahead of a stylist who wore a mask. The video caused a stir because not only was Pelosi violating rules regarding wearing face coverings, but also in California, salons have been banned from operating since the state's lockdown was imposed in March. They were allowed to accept outdoor customers on Tuesday, the day after Pelosi's appointment. Pelosi said her visit for a wash and blowout was perfectly appropriate and she blamed the salon for making her look bad. "This salon owes me an apology," Pelosi said Wednesday, according to the Los Angeles Times. "It was clearly a setup," the House Speaker said. "I take responsibility for falling for a setup by a neighborhood salon I've gone to for many years." Caius denied the allegations. She had called the stylist, or her assistant did, and made the appointment, she told Fox News' Tucker Carlson on Wednesday. "So the appointment was already booked. There was no way I could have set that up, and I've had a camera system in there for 5 years. I mean, I didn't go in there and turn cameras on as soon as she walked in to set her up, so that is absolutely false." And there's a clip from Fox News interviewing the salon owner. The salon owner also pushed back against Pelosi's claim that it was Pelosi's understanding that salons could see customers one-on-one. "I heard that and I thought to myself, well, as a hairstylist, I see clients one-on-one. So that would mean that I would be open, right?" Caius said. Instead, she said, her business has been closed and it's pretty much done. "We've lost at least 60% of our clients. I've lost the majority of my staff," she said. 6 months is a long time to be closed down. Caius said having the House Speaker attack her was hurtful. "She's been coming in for quite a while, and just to see her come in, and especially not wearing the mask, that's what really got to me," she said. "This isn't even political," Caius said. "I mean, she's been coming in there. It's the fact that she actually came in and didn't have a mask on. And I just thought about my staff and people not being able to work and make money and provide for their families. If she's in there comfortably without a mask and feeling safe, then why are we shut down? Why am I not able to have clients come in?" Caius said the publicity over the Pelosi video has spawned a deluge of hatred toward her and her business. "Since this happened, I have received nothing but hate text messages, death threats, saying that they're going to burn my hair salon down," she said, indicating that after 12 years in San Francisco, she might have to move. "My Yelp page is just unbelievable with bad reviews. It's just sad that my community is pulling this. They're saying that I threw her under the bus when I didn't, Caius said. So that's hurtful, but yeah, I think I'm pretty much done now. That's the end of the article. But interestingly, 3 hours after Pelosi had been to get her hair done, she was on a TV interviewing, basically saying that people should be responsible and wear masks. So the height of hypocrisy, in my opinion. Fortunately, there are people who do support Erica Caius, who is suffering financially and also from these threats. There's an article by Breitbart, which I'm not going to read. I don't have time to do that. Owner of salon visited by Nancy Pelosi raises over $220,000 on GoFundMe. So hopefully that will help her financial situation. I just want to quickly cover another bit of breaking news this week, which in a way is related to the story I've just told about Pelosi. And this is an article by Uncover DC, and it's CDC releases new data. 6% of total deaths are from coronavirus only. This was published on August 31st. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention updated their website last week and disclosed out of the 161,392 deaths in the CDC database, just 6%, about 9,700 deaths, were attributed to the coronavirus alone. According to the CDC, the other 94% had an average of 2.6 additional conditions or causes of death, such as heart disease, diabetes, and sepsis. The following is the top underlying medical conditions linked to coronavirus deaths according to the CDC. Influenza and pneumonia, respiratory failure, hypertensive disease, diabetes, vascular and unspecified dementia, cardiac arrest, heart failure, renal failure, intentional and unintentional injury, poisoning, and other adverse events, other medical conditions. Dr. David Samady, MD, urologic oncology expert and robotic surgeon, commented on the CDC news via Twitter. As a men's health expert, many men have been affected by COVID-19. The CDC today revealed that only 6% of COVID deaths were in patients without existing comorbidities. 94% of the deaths were in cases with pre-existing conditions. This affects the entire public. Again, I'm not going to read the whole of the article because we're coming close to the end of the show, but it does underscore that this scandemic, plandemic, was all a ploy to take down the economy, in my opinion, and to damage Trump's chances of re-election. But so many people are waking up to this, and to the other things that I've covered in the show, the riots and the protests and everything else, that people just aren't buying into it anymore. They see how ridiculous it is that there's the continuing shutdowns, continuing orders to wear masks for something that's less deadly than the annual flu. We don't wear masks in flu season, so why should we wear masks for COVID-19? I must say, in closing, this year has been surreal, and I think it's going to continue to be surreal. There was an article by Western Journal saying the Washington Post promises catastrophic violence if Biden doesn't win. And of course, we know that Pelosi has been telling Biden not to concede if he loses the election. So I think this craziness is going to continue up to the election. And goodness knows what's going to happen if Trump wins again, especially in a landslide. But we'll have to wait and see. No doubt they'll be challenging the election results. Anyway, that's all I have time for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you want to find out more about what I do, go to the successalchemist.net and the webalchemist.net. And incidentally, a few weeks ago, I did a show which spent the first half hour talking about creating our own reality. I actually decided to transcribe that and create a blog post from it. So if you'd like to read that, please go along and look at my website, look at the article in the blog section. And if you'd like to join my mailing list, you can download a free copy of Dream Achievers Success Kit. Okay, so that's all for now. I hope you'll join me for another Cosmic Creating show next week. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next week. Lots of things going on, and you know, more than I actually have time to cover on the show. But as I said, I hope you'll join me. I thank you for listening, and also thank you to Nancy for producing. So I will hopefully see you next week. Take care and bye for now.
You have been listening to the Cosmic Creating Radio Show with Jan Shaw, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Live long and prosper.